Thank you for joining with us for another episode of Morning Briefings here on the Pipeline Intercession for the President and on our podcast. If you have any dreams that you have about the Office of the President, please send them to pip@christiancenterstreetport.com. We're so thankful that you all have joined in with us on this prayer journey, and we look forward to standing with you not only today, but in the days ahead. So with that, we'll go ahead and join today's broadcast as we talk about the news and stand on the wall for this nation and the Office of the President. Good morning, everyone. Zach Arskadin coming to you live from North Carolina. And today we want to look at the season we are in and where we've come from as we've gone through our study of reordering our day and looking at the transition Jacob went through from leaving the land of Laban and entering into the promise of the Lord for his family, his generations, to enter into the destiny of being the nation of Israel and the beginning of that, the beginning origins of that. And today we want to focus on the coming harvest that is near. And in order to do that, I want to take a step back in understanding what steps the Lord has ordered us to take and some of the promises that are laid out in Scripture for us as we walk closer and closer towards being the generation that is a part of the coming harvest and leading the coming harvest in. And so the verse of the day I want to start off with, and then I want to read a short excerpt from the Reordering Your Day book on a dream, an interpretation of the dream from Gloria Zion in the book. And the verse of the day I want to focus on, and it'll make more sense as I'm reading through the dream, of for in this case, in John 4:37-38, this saying is true. One sows and another reaps. I sent you to reap that for which you have not labored. Others have labored, and you have entered into their labor. And there are those that have come before us who have labored and sown seed. And we ourselves may be even that generation who has sown seed for those who come behind us and for future generations. And the dream I want to read comes from an early morning prayer on February 21st, 2006 from Violet Dixon. And if you know anything about Gloria Zion, this dream really outlines what they're walking through and what we as a nation are walking through ourselves as well, and more so the body of Christ here in America. And why I think it's important is to remind ourselves of where we've come from, number one, but also where we're headed. And even these growing pains, the birthing pains that we're walking through right now, is I think this is a good reminder for us to understand from 2000, this dream is from 2000, or at least 2006. And the dream is, she says, we were back in Corsicana, moving into John's grandmother's house, which we did 30 years ago. It was in the same old condition it was in when we first moved in. I kept feeling like I had been there and done that, but it was also like it was happening for the first time. I was going through the house cleaning and then began to sort through boxes of old moth-eaten junk. I began to wonder how we were going to afford to fix the house up. We did not have anything. I began to go through a small box, pulling out junk, and kept thinking I should go deeper. At the bottom of the box, I found a stack of original first-run Elvis Presley records. I thought, these are worth a fortune. There were about 24 of them. I felt like I had found treasure. Then the dream changed, and I was getting married. All of our friends were 30 years ago were there, but our current friends were there as well. It was a new thing. I kept thinking, I'm getting married. I've got to get ready. There was a guy from the past who kept trying to talk to me, and I would say, I'm glad you're here, but I've got to go get ready. When I walked into the bedroom to get ready, I looked in the mirror, and I was ready. My hair was fixed. I had on this exquisite gown, and my mother walked into the room with this unbelievably beautiful pearl necklace, her grandmother's. She put it on me and said, now you're ready. When she fastened the necklace on me, the clasp was a ring and a pin, just like the symbol of the Hebraic year 5766, the Shema Vav. And this was obviously during that year. Then Chuck Pierce began to prophesy about this dream and basically the interpretation in saying, and this is what the Lord, he felt like the Lord showed him. It says, I am renewing my covenant with you, not only with Violet, but with Glory Zion and with the church in this nation. He says, I've called you into a place of renewal. Even though you were at the end of a season and you have felt depleted, I am renewing my covenant with you and bringing you back full circle. I will begin to draw the testimony out of you that is deep within you, even though you say, how can I start over and move into a new place? I'm going to give you supernatural strength to start over. I am also going to have you uncover some things that I have held and kept hidden until now. Things from your past that you have never seen. Now, the hidden riches that I have deposited in you will be uncovered. I will uncover hidden riches and past movements of my spirit and redemptive plans that you did not know were redeemable at the time that you initially experienced them. There are depths of spiritual deposits to be redeemed. There are sounds that I will bring forth. And if that doesn't tell you what Glory Zion is literally walking out right now, I mean, it's so profound, because that's literally what they're doing, redeeming past movements of the spirit and purifying it, pulling out those golden nuggets that God has used as being redeemable. But I continue on. I am dressing you for the renewal of my covenant and positioning you to receive the blessings of that covenant. Even my family members that have gone before you will experience the power of this renewal. I will cause this generation that is rising and following you to reap the labors of your hands as you reap from the labors of others' hands. And he goes on to say, look deep into every member of your family, for there are treasures that each have stored that can be brought to you at this time. This is more personal for her. There are things I have deposited in families that are redeemable and must be redeemed now. And I think that's even something we can each take for our own families. He says, I am causing you to enter into a reaping season to understand the power of reaping like you have never understood before. In this reaping season, you will quickly face off with the injustices that have caused you not to reap in the past. This is the time of reaping. Find the treasures that are hidden deep in the fields that I take you to, like the pearl. When you uncover that which is hidden, it will become a strand of grace around your neck. This is a time that you will adorn you and your future. I am adorning you as a bride. I am uncovering the mysteries of my bride and will cause the world to view her in a different way. This is a time to ready yourself quickly to move forward and present yourself to the world in a way that you have not presented yourself. And I think this is amazing just to be able to go back and look at and see when this was prophesied and the dream was given, 2006, to where they are now, and the things that we're walking in right now are in step and in alignment with this, and even the things that Glory Zion is doing itself and other churches who are following the move of the Holy Spirit are doing this, of redeeming the things of, and God and this is a warning then to deal with the heart issues and as God has exposed those things. Now, with that being said, I think it's a good foundation for us to walk into today and continue to walk out, continue to labor, continue to sow seeds of not only for ourselves, our nation, but more importantly, the office of the president. Now, there are some things that I want to go over real quick and some statements that have been made that are very key on understanding where we're at and where we're headed, not only as this nation, but economically as well for the world. And first, to start with the issue that came out yesterday in and around the Supreme Court. First is the rulings that did not come out on the Dobbs, Mississippi case, but another case came out where they did not want to rule on the Dobbs case of the Egbert versus Bolle and dealing with border issues and narcotics and the DEA there. Nothing on the Dobbs case. That's really the only thing I want to talk about there on that issue, is that we're still waiting. There's speculations that obviously we believe that Roberts is trying to water it down. That's why he's waiting longer. And also for waiting longer, you see the sad stories that have come out that somebody attempted to assassinate and take out a sitting Supreme Court justice, Justice Kavanaugh. And the fact that he saw the combatant, saw U.S. Marshals standing outside his house, he went and somehow confessed to the craziness that he was about to commit. And that's how the exposure came to be. And I want to say this is, we may not think our prayers are needed in this season or that they're fruitless. If we didn't pray, we didn't bring recognition to this, there wouldn't be U.S. Marshals outside their house, because some politicians didn't necessarily want to do that. So we do want to, number one, continue to pray for these justices, for their families, and for them to have peace through this storm. And specifically, our dream of the balance beam is John Roberts is watching Brett Kavanaugh. This is literally playing out before your very eyes. The reason they're attacking Brett Kavanaugh is because even recently, months after he took his seat as a justice, he was showing that the pressure got to him a little bit, unfortunately. And that's why they're attacking him. That's why Roberts is looking at him, as if he can stand up. Gorsuch has shown he can stand up. Coney Barrett is showing she can stand up. But Kavanaugh is the one chink in the armor, the weak link in the chain that they know can go after. And he needs prayer more than ever. As the comments from Chuck Schumer, who talked about Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, of saying that you're going to pay the price for, and this is really alarming and something we need to repent of him for saying, of going after Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, of potential ruling on cases of life, because he supposedly disagrees with them. And this is coming exposing after everything. Then this is the scary, scary thing, is that pro-abortion activists not only are still going to the home of Brett Kavanaugh, even after the assassination attempt, but they're going towards the school of Brett Kavanaugh's daughters and making messages towards his wife and his children, saying that, you know, lawmakers only care about your husband. They don't care about you. So we're going to come after you. That's why we want to continue to pray for their families in this issue. And something has to be said that, okay, where does the White House stand on this? The White House surprisingly came out and showed support for the security of Kavanaugh and his family in condemning the attack of an armed man who came from California to commit this act, and yet basically turned himself in and told people, he basically told those involved that he was going to try to kill Brett Kavanaugh and then was ultimately going to commit suicide afterwards, which is just, I mean, heinous in and of itself. But one thing that is being very kind of highly pointed out is, where is the DOJ in all of this? Where is AG Merrick Garland in the fact of, you know, you kind of have a duty to do something about this, and you're not. And so we're seeing that being played out before our very eyes. But I want to point this out again, is that as even after this assassination attempt, what is coming very clear is the two-tiered system involved in the justice system right now. Obviously, with the whole, and you're going to see this today from mainstream media, January 6th, they're not going to talk about this. But this needs to be talked about, is that it is a federal law to not be able to picket or parade at the house and obstruct justice at a judge's house. And that comes from U.S. Code 18, paragraph 1507, and picketing or parading, which we've read before, and I want to read again, whoever with the intent of interfering with, obstructing, or impeding the administration of justice, or with the intent of influencing any judge, juror, witness, or court officer in the discharge of his duty, pickets or parades in or near a building housing a court of the United States, or in or near a building of residence occupied or used by such judge, jurors, witnesses, or court officer, or with such intent, using any sound, truck, or similar device, or resorts to any other demonstration in or near any such building or residence, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. So the question is, why isn't Merrick Garland doing something about this? Very, very questionable. Now, people get mad at Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin for not doing anything, but because some of them reside, the Supreme Court justices reside in Virginia, some in Maryland, some in other counties and states. But the reality is, and John Nolte from Breitbart points this out very clearly, is that you can't get mad at him for not enforcing federal law, because in order for a local police to force to uphold federal law, they have to be deputized by the feds, and a state governor cannot enforce federal law. And ultimately, Merrick Garland, this is why Merrick Garland is being called out here from John Nolte, and it again, I think it's very worthy of calling him out. And understand this is, again, thank God for Mitch McConnell and what he did and being able to use the rule of law within his hands to making sure Merrick Garland wasn't a Supreme Court justice. Gorsuch is on the Supreme Court right now because Mitch McConnell did his rightful duty and he had the votes to not be able to put him through, and thank God we're reaping the fruits of that, and to some degree the non-fruits of that in the fact that Merrick Garland is an AG and needs to be dealt with, and the rule of law needs to be upheld from the DOJ and Merrick Garland's office, and unfortunately it is not. Next story we have is that the House is passing a sweeping gun reform legislation that will ultimately die in the Senate, as we are fully aware of, and the negotiations are pretty much falling apart as they're really not coming to a deal in the Senate because Republicans are wisely not falling for the dupe. The bills passed, it's a accumulation of eight gun regulated bills. They're calling it Protect Our Kids Act, obviously building off the political momentum of the recent past shootings. And know that five Republicans, Anthony Gonzalez, who is on his way out, Brian Fitzpatrick, and Adam Kinzinger, who is in a heated battle to win his reelection, Chris Jacobs and Fred Upton, all voted against for these measures. Again, the Republicans, which is an alarming fashion. But one thing I want to point out is Jim Jordan from Ohio, who's a great spokesman for things, is saying that many of these elements in the bill are unconstitutional, and even the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has said so. And so when we see that Jim Jordan and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal is saying that a lot of these bills are unconstitutional, that is quite alarming. And in reality, it'll most likely die in the Senate, as they need 60 votes to be able to overcome the filibuster and pass this through. And it doesn't look like 10 Republicans and really all Democrats will vote forward for all of these measures. We've talked about yesterday with the comments made from Matthew McConaughey, the facts don't actually play out in favor of taking away the freedom of law-abiding citizens who follow the laws in place. This goes back to even the issue with Merrick Garland of let's uphold the laws that are already on the books. There's talks of increasing security around the Supreme Court, but we don't need to send funding to this department, that department. Let's just uphold the law on the books. And a lot of these issues will be dealt with, but I digress. Okay, a little bit on some economic news is that we're seeing Janet Yellen, who has gone before several committees over the last couple of days in one answering questions on inflation, and then yesterday answering questions on the coming proposed budget from the Biden administration in dealing with what to do next. And this is where it's important to pray for our leaders now and in the season ahead. Number one, for not crippling the next several generations, which unfortunately it's somewhat inching closer and closer towards that. But in reality is there are people waking up to these issues because their pocketbooks are being hit by it. And Janet Yellen on Tuesday was before the, let me make sure I get this one correct, because she was on another committee yesterday, talking to the Senate Finance Committee on the issue of inflation, and was asked about the issue with inflation of, do they expect to increase their expectations, their marker of where they think inflation will be. They had put it at 4.7%, but ultimately saying that they're reevaluating right now, and they're not sure exactly where it lies, continuing to blame the COVID pandemic, which you could honestly say is a government-caused pandemic from even the past administration to this one, with the government stimuluses as well, and then obviously the issue with what's going on in Russia and Ukraine, causing to a lot of these issues as energy prices continue to rise. She blames it and says that, well, the entire world is dealing with this, so we can't say that it's solely just the stimulus packages that we've put out there. And again, walking back her statements on the transitory nature of inflation, which, again, we have to remember this, is that she's going to defend these actions taken by the administration, because she herself laid the groundwork for this when she was the Fed chair under Obama. And so we have to realize that she agrees with these policy decisions. And she says some things that are quite alarming that I think we need to be very aware of, in the fact that she's saying that the White House and this administration is doing everything within its power and has exhausted efforts to reduce energy costs for the American citizens. And I want to highlight some things that are quite alarming in what she said, in that when talking about what the administration has done, is saying that dealing with the supply side of, which I agree with her on that, of, you know, the administration is doing something as far as dealing with the supply side of the energy crisis. And yes, that's true. But she says the thing that is being done is the supply side tactic of releasing millions of barrels of oil from the U.S. Petroleum Reserve. But that's a short term. Long term is making sure we're producing enough oil to, number one, backfill the strategic oil reserve, and then also have oil there for the market itself to meet the demand that will be there of energy. And she goes on to say that, well, now that we're at this point and prices have reached to a point, we now need to shift and get away from fossil fuels. And this is what she said. She said, it's important for the U.S. to leave fossil fuels behind as a source of energy, since they contribute to greenhouse gas emissions that raise the temperature of the planet, in addition to dragging on consumer pocketbooks. Investing in clean energy and renewables would reorder the dependence on global oil markets, which are subject to geopolitical risk and could bring utility bills down. And saying that the United States has nothing we can do to circumvent that, which we've been talking about it, we've been studying this for a while, and now there are studies that come out that deal with two things. One, I'll bring this up. The first study comes out and shows that U.S. crude output is still below pre-pandemic crisis levels, and ultimately slowing production could weigh on growth. Now, why is this important, you say? Let's remember back to when Jen Psaki said that production of oil has never been higher, and we've gotten back to the pre-pandemic levels. Well, When you actually look into it further, and we questioned it here, well, was that really true? You have to look at the data. We didn't really have the time to look through it, but the Energy Information Administration, which actually looked at it and showed that as of the ending of May 27th, domestic production in the United States totaled 11.9 million barrels per day, and the pre-pandemic levels of February 2020 were at the peak 13.1 million. So we're not even back to the point of pre-pandemic levels, which goes against the narrative that the White House itself said we were. So just pointing that out there. And then it gets into the issue of the strategic oil reserve being pulled out, nothing being backfilled. In this study and energy speculations on what's going to happen in the future with the fact that the Biden administration is halting, doing everything in its power to prevent the long-standing understanding that we need to continue to produce oil for gas to be lower. Then I want to point this study out, because if Janet Yellen and other economists and the administration is being wholeheartedly, the Energy Secretary, EPA, labor, everybody is gung-ho, the World Economic Forum, Central and South America, China are all gung-ho on quote-unquote renewable energy. It's not even greenhouse or clean. It's just renewable. There's a study that came out, a peer-reviewed study. And this is the facts. That means people looked at it, digested it, and surveyed it, and tried to poke holes in it. And this is one of the best studies I've seen as I've started to study this issue recently, in the fact of when you look at how people look at the cost of green renewable energy, wind and solar, and battery, and saying that, yes, CO2, or when these things burn the energy that they do, it doesn't produce as much CO2. But what they leave out is the pre-production to get to the point of even having the energy, and then the post-life of what the cost is and what the effects are on the overall environment. And there is a study. Let me blow this up so we can make sure we can see it. Is out of Canada, a peer-reviewed study published in the June issue of the Journal of Management and Sustainability by the Canadian Center of Science and Education, looks at, and here's what is important, looks at the total cost, considering what actually goes into the transition to wind and solar, and actually found it to be more expensive and environmentally non-viable, meaning that it is actually more harmful to the environment, debunking the myth that is said of, well, it's a cleaner energy, which is totally just a facade. And the article goes on to say, it says, we introduced and described the methodology for determining the full cost of electricity or the full cost to society. It explains why wind and solar are not cheaper than conventional fuels and in fact become more expensive the higher their penetration in the energy system. The study focuses on 10 categories and 10 factors, including 1, the cost of building, fuel operating, transportation, storage, backup, emissions, recycling, this is hardly ever considered in most studies done by those who want to push the leaving of fossil fuels, room or space for storage, which we don't have the capacity at and still don't have a way of doing that, even though they're trying, and 3 other metrics, material input per unit of service, equipment lifetime, how long they last, and energy return on investment. Now, let's understand this, is that Tesla itself says that their batteries at maximum will only last 15 years. That's how much they are pretty much saying that they'll last. Some may last longer, some shorter, depending on the uses and how they're used and often, et cetera, stuff like that. There's always outliers. But the general lifeline that they say, 15 years for a battery. Then you have to replace it, which costs the price of another car in and of itself. But back to the study, and this is the issue of simply the recycling aspect There are no steps that have been considered as far as a clean way to recycle them. And then you have to consider what happens to those batteries when they're done. They're the first generation of electronic cars are sitting on junkyards, not being demolished because they don't know what to do with the batteries, as is the case even with smaller batteries. And the bigger and bigger you go, the more toxins that can potentially be released into the environment. And we as believers have a call from the Lord to make sure we're doing our responsibility to protecting the land. And I want to show you this study, this chart from this study, and it shows the actual cost and really the environmental aspects of renewable energy, such as solar, hydro, and wind, and even looking at gas, and the amount of materials that are needed that are considered toxic involved, even from the environmentalist, in production of each form of energy. Coal is at 1,200 megaton watts. Gas at 600, nuclear 900, hydro 14,100, solar 16,400, and you can see the breakdown of materials in other: steel, gas, copper, cement, concrete, and aluminum, as solar has to have more. And there are other materials as well that can be toxic when not recycled properly. You also have wind. There's the fact of it being intermittent, the fact that you have to have gas and other forms of energy to keep them going, geothermal as well. All these quote-unquote green ultimately produce more toxins into the environment than gas, coal, and nuclear. And that's during the full lifespan of the pre-production, production, and post-life cycle of the materials used to be able to produce. So when people say that when the energy is burned from the batteries, it doesn't produce CO2. That is true. You got to concede that, to be intellectually honest, but it's the before and after. What happens there is, are we considering in the whole life cycle of this? And this study here, peer-reviewed study, shows debunking that. And why that's important is because there needs to start being some evidence and some things shown and having these discussions. Now, I say all that, and I'll close on this, is that this is why we need to pray and intercede for our leaders as we continue to go through the primaries, as we continue to lead up to the midterms, praying for leaders that have fear of the Lord when deciding on what decisions to do next, making sure they have peace, they have wisdom, they have all the facts in front of them in order to not only just support the original intent of this nation to stand up for freedom, but then also to understand the full aspects of what is going on. We can fully understand why someone would want to make sure we're producing things cleaner and helping the environment. I wholeheartedly understand that passion and want to come alongside of them and say, okay, let's do look at this. Let's not just be so subjective that we put blinders on and say, this is the only way, as they're doing right now. Is let's say, okay, is this the only way, or are there other ways? Does this really do the things that you're saying it's doing, or are we not considering all factors? And right now, they're not considering all factors with the recycling aspect of wind and solar and the damages that it actually caused to the environment, plant and animal life, as they're even in use to gain the energy that are needed to burn. And part of the study goes on to talk about how much energy is actually needed, the moves from each nation and where we're headed, and whether this is actually viable or not. And that they come to the conclusion that it is ultimately more expensive and more harmful to the environment than even coal, natural gas, and oil. So with that, I'll close. Let's continue to stand on the wall, praying for the justices, praying for our leaders as they go through the campaign season, and we get heated up with the midterms coming up here in the fall. So blessings, and we will see you guys later. Have a good one.